You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Commentary Trek Stars, a show which looks at the work of Star Trek creators outside of Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we're joined by the commanding officer of Trek FM Europe, Colin.
I like that.
How's it going, Colin?
It's going well. I quite like that, commanding officer, Trek FM Europe.
Yeah, it's fitting. Colin, yeah. For those who don't know, is the host of both Trek News and Views and Deck 8, right?
Right.
Both of which can be found on Trek FM. So be sure to check those out. And he's here today to help us with part 6 in our look at Gene Roddenberry as a television creator, where we look at Earth Final Conflict. So, Colin, you've actually watched this show, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it was on over here, basically, as it aired in America, which is unusual in itself.
And now, Max, did you watch the show when it was on the air or not?
When it started, I watched the first few episodes, and then several years went by, and someone told me that show wasn't canceled.
Yeah. I guess that's how it works. I watched the first episode. I was actually looking forward to it quite a bit. I remember when it aired right after an episode of Deep Space Nine. And I watched it and I'm like, I guess I don't have to watch the rest of these. But
although there was a point, at some point, I think it was like season two, there was an episode on and I was like just floating through the dial. And I was watching it and I was like, is this a new show? Because nobody from the first season was in it.
Yeah, and that's something that we'll talk about. But first, just the basic premise of the show for those who don't know, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, Colin, but this is what I picked up from what I watched. I watched the first 5 episodes, and then I did research on the rest of it, but here's what I picked up. In the early 21st century, a race of aliens called the Talons come to live on Earth. For mysterious reasons, apparently, but they're like looking for sanctuary or something like that. And in return for letting them stay here, they give Earth their advanced technology and what have you. And, you know, while they appear to be benevolent, some people think they're trying to take over the world, and there's a human resistance which is formed to fight the Talons or to stop the Talons. And the first season, at least, focuses on a guy who is basically a double agent, right? He's hired as like a bodyguard for the Talons, but he's,
yeah, William Boone.
Yeah, but then he's also recruited by the Resistance to be like their inside man or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, from what I've read online, the show did change rather frequently. A large part of that seemed to do with casting, because basically they gave crappy contracts to their talent, and they would usually leave after a year or two.
Yeah, it was run on a tight budget, apparently, and basically people were signing on for 1-year contracts, and then I suppose in the business, when you know it's going to be a long-running TV show, you try and renegotiate your contract. And it always comes down to the money figures, and so the cast changed every year.
And there was like one guy who stayed on for the whole thing?
Sandoval.
No, not the villain.
He was the Talon collaborator.
Oh, he was a collaborator? Okay.
Yeah, he was the human protagonist of the entire series.
Okay, so now from what I've read, you know, from people who have watched the show or whatever and talking about, like, what happened or how it works or whatever, it seems like the general consensus is that season one was cool, and then seasons 2 through 4, they kind of lost their way, but it was still okay, and then season 5 is when it jumped the shark and they went into, like, a completely different direction. Would you agree with that analysis, Colin, or?
Yeah, season one showed an awful lot of promise. You had these super advanced aliens who could turn deserts into fields. cured cancer and things like that, and gave humanity a, it was like very Star Trek-ish in the fact that humanity came together because of an alien contact. And it did show a lot of promise, and then you had the resistance movement, and you had all the double dealing behind with the Talons, and there was a lot of covert stuff going on, and it showed real promise. But you kind of knew it was going to go slightly safe when, at the end of it, because, spoiler alert, they killed the hero. And you normally build your series around the hero. So if you're killing the hero off, then that's very unusual. So you kind of knew that magic kind of thing. I wonder where this is going to go then.
But you kept on watching through season 4 at least, right?
Yeah, well, I kept into it because I thought, you know, it's, like I said, season 1 showed promise. So, and then season 2, they kind of stuck on the same path with just the odd variation, and they tried to go for the mystical slant, you know, like superhumans and mystic powers and energy forces and stuff like that. But I stuck with it, and then when it got to season 3, then yeah, the writing was on the wall in season 3.
All right, and season 5 is when they got rid of the Talons and introduced the Atavus.
The energy vampires.
Atavus.
Atavus, yeah.
Okay, the energy vampires, who are much more like clear-cut bad guys, right?
Yeah, who just happened to be under Earth for 7 million years.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, that is that's a really troubling thing, because that's where the show suddenly starts to look a hell of a lot like Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, I think I heard that the original
title was Battlefield Earth.
It was Battleground Earth.
Yeah, Battleground Earth.
Battleground Earth, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure was just a typo. They were trying to make it Battlefield Earth.
Colin, what are your overall feelings of on the show, like in terms of quality or what have you? What are your thoughts?
Well, the first two series are the strongest two.
Okay.
And then you have trouble keeping up because the cast changes so often. You're not investing in the characters. With the exception of Sandoval, who was a bad guy anyway, you never had the same people from season to season, so it's kind of hard to invest in characters. And some of the writing was really, really dodgy.
Okay.
You watch some episodes and you think, oh, that's a good episode. Oh, all right, I'll watch next week. So you watch the next week and you're thinking, what the? How is this in any way linked to anything else that has happened anywhere else before? And I remember one episode where the girl's got no hands.
Yeah, I watched that episode.
Yeah, so the Talons grow her some hands. And it's almost, you get from that episode, you get the impression that, okay, there's no parameters here. It's basically come up with something weird and wonderful and write a show about it.
That episode was actually written by DC Fontana, which I thought was weird. But yeah, that was a bizarre episode, and that one also like led into, I guess that one, out of all the ones that I watched, it was kind of the most intriguing, because it sort of led into this idea of the Talons as being like messiah figures or whatever. You know, there was like a religion which was built around their presence and stuff like that. But it really did feel like a bottle show too. Like, do they ever go back to them doing stuff like that again? Or
no?
No. Okay.
Well, the show starts off a lot like V, and the aliens give us a whole bunch of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, immediately the human population has, basically two general philosophies on them. The one side is like, they're the best thing since cake. And the other side is saying, like, they're the worst thing since poisoned cake. And then they argue for the rest of the show, except, the audience is privy to all the secrets. So the audience is like, yeah, they're pretty dangerous.
No, but are they? Because, now this is something else that I read, from what I understand, the guy who actually developed the show only lasted like a few episodes, and then he left, and this other guy, Paul Gertz, took over. And it sounds like they went in a completely different direction. Like, I mean, I know it was supposed to be rather ambiguous, but like, did the Talons end up being good guys or bad guys, or was it just sort of a thing?
The end episode with the Talons,
which would be the end of season four, right?
Yeah. Okay. Is basically they go down this route about all sentient organisms being intertwined. So the humans are related to another species, and they're related to the Talons, and they're related to so and so and so and so. And because the Talons are basically energy based, at the end of it, they're in this volcano where there's this, for want of a better word, a splicing chamber, where you can splice DNA from different species. And the so-called human, Leon,
like an editing bay, but for things that are alive.
Yeah, and he convinces the Talons to fuse with humans to create a new species. And so they go in, and they're inside a volcano which starts erupting, which seals them in the volcano, and that's the last you see of them.
Okay.
And then this volcano erupting unleashes the energy vampires, which is season five.
That's a nice coincidence, actually.
It is. It's very coincidental, yeah. So you never know what happens with the blending. You never know if it works or anything like that. They just leave it.
So let me ask you this. Now, the main character in season one was William Boone, right? Was that his name, William Boone?
William Boone.
Now, I read that he came back and actually was in season five. How did that work?
I do not know.
If you go to the Earth Final Conflict Wikipedia page, they actually have a chart where you can look at all the people who like appeared as regulars on the show and which seasons they appeared in and whether or not they were regular guest stars or just recurring characters. And
wow,
yeah,
that's weird.
Yeah, it's a really big chart.
Yeah, it says it, yeah. The last series brief returns of season one hero William Boone, as well as the return of the previously androgynous Zor, resurrected as a female. So they bring two people back that should have been dead. But there is a premise for bringing him back, because when in season one, when he's supposed to be like injured beyond belief, you see him in like this healing water, like in Return of the Jedi.
That was Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back, sorry, yeah. You see William Boone in that type of thing, and then they close the door.
It's called Bacta, by the way.
So that is the foundation that they can use to bring him back. But to all intents and purposes, you are led to believe that he died, and they're just preserving him.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
But it doesn't make sense, because in season three, there's a genetically engineered soldier who you are led to believe is William Boone.
Okay.
So you then make the leap that he was in the war, the Bacta, and they genetically engineered him to make this soldier who dies.
I think you're just making this stuff up now.
This is why people had so much trouble with it, because it jumped all over the place.
To me, that reminds me sort of like my general philosophy on the show, which was that it seems like the showrunner was. We recently did a commentary for North by Northwest, and I was like, it's George Kaplan. He's the guy running this show. He doesn't really exist. There's an office somewhere. When people call the showrunner, they're calling an empty room.
Well, that guy, that showrunner there, his name is Paul Gertz, and we'll get into him in a second. But, Max, what were your thoughts on what you saw of the show?
It turns out I saw more than I thought, because I saw, I mean, like, I while I was watching the few episodes at the beginning, I was like, I remember all this. I remember this. And, like, so, you know, over the course of the years, I mooshed all of the episodes from the first, like, you know, year and a half into the pilot. And I was like, wow, the pilot, nothing happens. Like, not a thing happens in the 42 minutes of that episode. But over the course of the first season, very little happens. Mm-hmm. Aside from some random, you know, bits of things that seem largely disconnected. And then I had to sort of hop around in the show to sort of, like, figure out, like, where I stopped watching it, like, completely. I think it actually happened around season three, where I was at that point boycotting the show. But
somewhere at season five, like season four to season five, that transition, I was absolutely unaware of how that functioned, and even watching those episodes, I had no idea what was going on in that transition. If it really feels like they just decided to do a different series, yeah, and they continued some names.
And I mean, like, what did you think about the show on the whole? What are your thoughts in terms of quality or whatever?
Well, in preparation for these Roddenberry sort of alternate idea things, we investigated Earth Final Conflict and Andromeda, which were things that we were aware of when they came into existence and then stopped watching,
mm-hmm,
for various reasons. And Andromeda is not terrible. Andromeda kind of works. I could watch that show. This not good.
All right, I would agree with your analysis of Earth Final Conflict. To me, I mean, the impression that I kept on getting, you know, and we'll talk about this with Andromeda as well, but it felt like it was a casualty of its budget, you know what I mean? It almost feels like you're watching softcore porn, but that's kind of an insult to softcore porn. You know, I think it was like that time in the late 90s where they're like, we have CGI, we can do anything! And it's like, no, you can't. You really can't, and you really shouldn't. And, you know, as soon as that spaceship thingy starts flying around that you can see through, I'm like, okay. I mean, it just did not work. And like, it had such a low production value that I couldn't take it seriously. I mean, as far as, like, the writing is concerned, it's confusing as hell. Like, even in the beginning, they throw so much at you. I mean, the fact that they say, like, 3 years ago they came, it's like, okay, so we're already playing catch up, you know, we're already trying to figure out what's going on in the society, and there's so much like double crossing and ambiguity in terms of who is what, that from the very beginning I was like, I don't know what's going on here, I feel lost already. It's kind of like watching the prequels.
But don't you think that's because they're making a program based on someone else's idea that wasn't there to consult with?
Well, but how much of that is true? You know, I mean, that's something that we can talk about, you know, right now, which is...
conspiracy theories.
Paul Gertz, the guy who, as far as I can tell, was the head writer and the showrunner for the majority of the series. He flat out said, according to the internet anyway, that the show came from a premise that Gene Roddenberry wrote on a napkin, and that was in a lockbox that Majel Barrett had, and filled with other notes for shows and series which were written on things like receipts and napkins and what have you. And they took this idea, which he wrote on a napkin, and turned it into a TV show. So I really don't think that Gene Roddenberry had much to do with it at all. I think it was something that he was like, I got an idea, you know, sitting with someone at a table in a restaurant one time, and he writes this down on a napkin, and then he's like, oh, that's a terrible idea. And then he goes to, like, throw the napkin away, and someone digs it out of the garbage and puts it in a lockbox, just in case. You know what I mean?
I think you're assuming that that napkin actually had text about aliens printed on it. I'm inclined to think that it was probably just a shopping list. Okay. That had, because it was written, you know, on a napkin, probably in a hurry, probably was barely readable.
Uh-huh.
And somebody tried to make sense of it and was like, I don't know, maybe it says aliens. And like V. See that V there? Maybe he's saying, it's like that, but with different names for things.
But this Paul Gertz guy, this is really pretty much the only thing of substance that he wrote. He also wrote an episode of The Practice, and he wrote an animated thing called Through the Mobius Strip. Have you guys seen this or heard of it?
I haven't heard of The Practice, so there you go.
The Practice, that's the one, the David E. Kelly show.
It fits into Boston Legal continuity.
Yeah, Boston Legal is a spinoff of The Practice.
Oh, okay.
So basically think of a serious version of Boston Legal. That's what it is. But this Through the Mobius Strip thing, I guess, is an animated feature based on the work of Mobius. So I guess that's this guy's thing, to take like stuff that famous sci-fi people have done and make other things out of it.
Well, that's the problem. It's like in season two when you've got the energy staff, which is like, you know, for all intents and purposes, is a bloody wand. Uh-huh. I mean, how many Dungeons and Dragons-esque connotations has that got? And you've got the human hybrids, which is a staple of science fiction in any writers, you know, they've all write about human hybrids at some point, even in the formative years. So that's basically what it is. It's like a hodgepodge of science fiction ideas, and let's try and build an episode around it, and then we'll try and build a series around the episodes.
It did seem like it definitely felt of its time, and like a lot of that, like when I watched the episode with the girl who they grow hands for, or the other episode with like the lady who used to date William Boone, who's like really good at playing this this alien instrument. Like, she's the only human who can play this instrument, you know. So
yeah,
well.
And at the end of the series, she's not human.
Oh, she comes back.
Yeah, she comes back and she's altered into another species.
What is going on in this show? I mean, this show is crazy.
Even, like, every character on the show wasn't, strictly speaking, their species.
No.
Like, almost everybody was turned out to be a hybrid, or was then made into a hybrid. And, that's not how genes work.
No.
You can't suddenly become half alien.
It's like the new good guy, which was Liam Kincaid. He was supposed to be the last of his kind. He was the last, was it the Chimeras?
Yeah.
And he was supposed to be the last of his kind, and everyone else had wiped out and died and everything. And then in season four, his dad comes back.
And there's two of him.
Yeah.
Does that mean, like, there's so many different angles on these characters?
Who the hell sometimes are the Chimeras? What?
They're another race. That's not CH, it's K.
And K-I. K-I.
Yeah.
What?
Well, I mean, that's how you speak. I mean, Chimera, the C-H-I. I mean, you don't. What else would you use? Your Y?
But so much. It's like the arm weapons, the Skrill, that you see in the first five episodes, Mike.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They evolve into like a bird-like animal.
Okay, so that thing, that's not just like a piece of like biotechnology. That's
no,
like
it's
an
a living
alien
thing. It's a living alien that can tap into the human nervous system and the natural energy in a living body and convert it into a weapon, which is why in the first five episodes, when Boone's firing it, the more he fires it, the tighter he gets.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another thing that really bothers me about a lot of things this show more than almost anything else. The idea of using energy for absolutely everything. All of these aliens need, like, various forms of energy from other forms of life. I mean, humans are like, they're treated like energy factories for a lot of different things. But energy is such a loose term. It's like, sometimes it just makes you sleepy. And sometimes it kills your face off. And sometimes it's, like, literally a form of some sort of goo that can be extracted from your body. I really am annoyed by those things.
Are you talking about the one where they put, like, basically the straws through the belly button to drink them?
I am aware. Yes, I'm talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are too many things for energy extraction and not a single word to explain what the hell the energy is that they are talking about.
Or why they're doing it.
Wait, so who's drinking energy from belly buttons?
Aliens!
But not the Atavus?
The
Atavus? No, this is before them. This is before them. I think that was season four.
Yeah, the Atavus don't use straws.
No.
They're like animals. They like to dig in there. I mean, I suppose they could use straws, but that's not their style.
No. No, it was the Thailands that were drinking the energy through the straw-like things.
Okay, now is that them
they use
being
straws
bad?
They're prissy.
Like, were they like drinking them from, like, they were drinking energy out of humans?
They were drinking energy out of humans, but it wasn't like, hey, look at that human. I bet his energy tastes good. You got your straw, Steve? Yeah, I got my straw. All right, let's go jump him. It wasn't like that. It was like, all right, they're these people are all full on our drug thing. Let's go get some energy out of them. And people would be like, hey, that's really weird that you're taking energy from me. And they'd say, yeah, but I mean, it's not like we're killing you. And they'd go, yeah, that's a good point. All right, carry on. And that was it.
Okay. All right. Okay, so, this Paul Gertz guy, you know, he barely wrote anything, but his like, big thing in the industry, I guess, is he's, like, he's essentially, like, an executive, from what I understand. He used to work on a lot of animation. I think at one point he actually ran Hanna-Barbera. He was, like, an executive producer on Titan A.E. He produced The Pagemaster.
I'm telling you, this guy's like Alan Smithy. He's not an actual person. He's just a name that people use.
Okay. Well, what he does now, apparently, is he's like an executive who works on documentaries. He did the documentary Facing Ali and stuff like that. So, but he's basically just like a studio guy. He's like what Rick Berman was back before he joined Star Trek, from what I gather. But I'm not 100% positive. One person who you do see who was an executive producer on the show is Majel Barrett.
You're bound to.
Yeah, she shows up in the first few episodes as like a doctor.
Yeah, and she's in with the Resistance.
Yeah, they do that cute little thing where she has a picture of Gene Roddenberry sitting on her desk. And it's also weird, in the credits as an actress, she's listed as Majel Barrett, but then as an executive producer, she's listed as Majel Roddenberry. And I know that like Rod Roddenberry worked on the show quite a bit. He actually, on the DVD that I watched, he gave an introduction talking about how, you know, his experience working on the show and stuff like that, and how he, you know, really enjoyed it and how he thinks that season one is the best. But yeah, it sounds like he took, you know, a pretty active role in the production of the series. Other Star Trek people who worked on it, there were a couple writers, DC Fontana, who we mentioned earlier. Obviously, she was a writer on the original series. I think she pretty much ran the writing staff of the animated series, from what I gather. She wrote Yesteryear, which is the only episode of that show worth watching. But yeah, she also wrote Encounter at Farpoint. And then she did an episode of Deep Space Nine. She did Dax. Another Star Trek writer was Lisa Klink, who worked on Voyager for a number of years. And then one of the directors on the show was Alan, I believe he pronounced it Kraker, K-R-O-E-K-E-R. I think he pronounces it Kraker, maybe Croker. I think it's Kraker.
Kraker sounds about right.
And he was like the go-to guy for Star Trek directors in the later years. He directed the finales of Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise. So that's kind of cool. And he directed, I think, one or two episodes of this show at least. A couple of other noteworthy writers who worked on this show, Howard Chaykin and J.M. DeMatteis, both comic book writers. Howard Chaykin, of course, very famous for a lot of his stuff in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and what have you, none of which I've really read. He's also the guy who wrote like the first like 10 issues of the Star Wars comic book back in 1977. And J.M. DeMatteis has done a lot of stuff that I like, you know, most notably probably the Justice League stuff that he did with Keith Giffen, where he turned it into a comedy series in the 80s.
Well, that's the Justice League comics that are worth reading.
He's also written a lot of stuff recently for, like, decent, like he wrote Brave and the Bold episodes and stuff like that. He's very active still. It's good stuff. All right. Well, what you guys have any final thoughts on this? I've got a question for you guys, I guess.
Did you know about the spinoff?
Final thoughts. Well, wait, I heard that they were talking about doing that, where essentially like one of the characters goes into space and looks for strange new worlds and new civilizations.
Renai. She's going to go to other planets and find out where other aliens are doing stuff.
Yeah. And do some more gene splicing.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea for something that nobody should ever do.
But it never happened, right?
No, and there's really no reason to, because it's not really like a, it's not really an idea for a show. I mean, it probably has more, you know, more thought and research behind it than the napkin.
Uh-huh.
But it's still not a solid idea for a series.
So here's my final question for you guys. Considering the fact that this was a show based on an idea that Gene Roddenberry wrote on a napkin 20 years prior, given the opportunity, do you think Gene Roddenberry would have made this show?
Probably, but not the way it was.
Okay. What do you think, Max?
Well, I have a question about that. Like, the idea, like, you know, would Roddenberry make the show? I mean, like, the response, probably, but not the way it was. I don't know what that means. Like, because, I mean, like, that to me, that implies, like, no, he wouldn't have made the show. He would have made another show.
No, because you don't know what was on that napkin.
My feeling is that the only explanation that makes any sense that justifies this hypothesis that it was based on a note on a napkin is that at some point Gene Roddenberry wrote on a napkin aliens question mark.
I mean, maybe that could just be
aliens.
No, I mean, I could see, like my guess as to what was on the napkin is like aliens come to Earth and give us their technology. No one knows why they're here. I personally don't think that the show would have been much like this if Roddenberry had done it. I think that it's I think there's too much conflict in Earth Final Conflict. I don't know. I mean, I know that it's about sort of like getting there, and I mean, what you're saying about, you know, the Roddenberry idea, the Star Trek idea of, you know, aliens coming to Earth and bringing, you know, humans together and everything. That's cool, but that's sort of like all prior to this show, and now what we see is like that kind of falling apart. We're looking at sort of the underbelly of that and all the double-crossing and backstabbing that goes on with these aliens, and I don't think that he would have made a show like that. I don't know.
I think that if that the problem there is that you're assuming that he would be so crazy that he would stick to his guns despite how destructive it might be, and I think that there's a logical argument to be made for that, because his tendency was to stick to his ideals despite the dramatic consequences and the ratings consequences. He would be perfectly willing to, you know, sabotage his program in order to make a statement about things that perhaps is not logical.
Okay.
So even though, you know, I can imagine him having, you know, created the series and being in season one, and the writers are all saying nothing is bad, nothing bad is happening. We're like six episodes in, and so far the only thing that we've had to deal with was like a trade dispute, and like the solution was to give the employees shares in the company. And he's like, yeah, isn't this great show? No violence. But ultimately, I think that the logical argument is that had Gene Roddenberry been in a position to make this show, he might have wanted to, but it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Because he would be pushing for insane things, and the other people who wanted to do the series would be pushing for completely reasonably stupid things, and there would be no consensus, and the show wouldn't have happened.
Well, that's about all the time that we have for today. Colin, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on the Trek FM network under the podcast bar. You can find Trek News and Views and Deck 8. Or you can follow me on Twitter at COLMH01, or the podcast account, which is Trek News Views.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for leading us through the world of Earth Final Conflict. As always, you can find us online at CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do our other show, Commentary Track Stars, and you can find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars, or you can email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. We will be back next week with part 7 of our Gene Roddenberry series, again with Colin, where we look at Andromeda.